Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 9, the Dynasty of Anshuman. Hare Krishna. Text number 13. Bhasmi Bhuta Anga Sangena Swa Yata Sagara Atmaja Kim Puna Charaya Devim Sevante Ye Drita Vrata Bhasmi Bhutanga Sangena Swaryata Sargaratmaja Kim Punaksharaya Devim Sevante Ye Drita Vrata Bhuta, a bhasma, which is ashes. An anga, I guess the limb, and a bhuta, how does that, and when how that word gets broken up, e bhuta, bhasma is ash, so how does the word get, how did it go from I, long I, from bhasma, I guess when it's bhasmi is plural for ashes. Yeah, whatever. Bhasmi Bhuta Anga, by the body which had been burnt to ashes. Sangena, by contacting the water of the Ganges. Swa Yata, went to the heavenly planets. Sagara Atmaja, the sons of Sagara. Kim, what? Speak of. Punaha, again. Sharaya, with faith and devotion. Devim, unto Mother Ganges. Sevante, worship. Yea, those persons who, Dhrita Vrata, with vows of determination. Translation purport by his. Purport, but this is a translation at least. This is a translation. Simply by having water from the Ganges come in contact with the ashes of their burnt bodies. The sons of Sargara Maharaj were elevated to the heavenly planets. Therefore, what is to be said of a devotee who worships Mother Ganges faithfully with a determined vow? One can only imagine the benefit that accrues to such a devotee. Text 14. Nayetad param ascharyam No worries. Swardunya yarihoditam ananta charnam boja prasutaya bhavachita. Translation purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Because Mother Ganges emanates from the lotus toe of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Anantadev, she is able to liberate one from material bondage. Therefore, whoever is described herewith about her, is not at all wonderful. Purport has actually been seen that anyone who regularly worships Mother Ganges simply by bathing in her water keeps very good health and gradually becomes a devotee of the Lord. This is the effect of bathing in the water of the Ganges. Bathing in the Ganges is recommended all the Vedic Shastras. And one who takes to this path will certainly be completely freed from all sinful reactions. The practical example of this is that the sons of Maharaj Sagara went to the heavenly planets when water from the Ganges merely touched the ashes of their burned bodies. Namo Vishnu Graya Krishna Prasai Bhutai Srimate Bhakti Vranta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasatu Deve Gauravani Pacharane Nirvishesha Srinivari Pasikatya De Sitarane. So here it mentions just by bathing the Ganges one keeps good health. When I was in one preaching center who was running, who was in Delaware in America, and there was one teacher there from India, and he was doing research on the Ganges. He was a chemical engineer, and he was given a grant by the Indian government to study the effects of chemicals on the Ganges. So he discovered that somehow or another that the Ganges purified whatever chemicals were put into the water. Therefore, scientifically, he was demonstrating the effect of the Ganges, the purifying element. Of course, they'll speculate exactly what is that element, how it purifies, etc. Just like, for instance, I don't know if I mentioned it yesterday, but I was watching one movie on ecology. And these people, they were, this is 1962 in England, and they were unemployed. It was a family. And they had practically no money. Their only money they were getting were £8 from unemployment. I guess £8 undoubtedly must have been worth a little bit more than it is today. £8, you could hardly take a subway there. In any case, £8 a month, hardly enough to buy a bottle of water with. But they had to live on £8, so they decided, they were up somewhere in the north of England, that they had to do some farming. But the only place available where they were was some place where there were all these broken bottles and sandy place, and not very nice. It's called Finhorn. And so, the first year they tried to grow something, but nothing really worked. So they were getting really hungry, and they were meditating, and then they learned in their meditation they should pray to the deities, that is the deity for each one of the plants. So they started to pray to the devas, meditate on the devas, and suddenly their garden took off. But it took off in an amazing way. They got like 60-pound cauliflower cabbages, and they got these huge, almost like little small trees of broccoli, and it became like an extraordinary thing. So people started to come, professors started to come trying to figure out what kind of organic gardening they were doing, but no one could really figure it out. They knew it was like extraordinary, but they couldn't figure out what the ingredient was. So the ingredient was to worship the devas. That was one indication of just a little bit of knowledge can go a long way, especially if you're hungry. So similarly here, the Ganges, although seemingly just another river in the world, but actually it's not just another river. It says it emanates from the toes of the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. Now how can we prove that? No one has a picture that I know of the water emanating from Lord Vishnu's toe. And at least scientifically nowadays, that would be the only acceptable way that people will, the scientists at least, or people in the scientific bent of mind, will take that as credible that the water of the Ganges has some contact with the toe of Vishnu. Because they don't believe in Vishnu, so it's what to speak of Vishnu's toe. Or what to speak of, even if there was a Vishnu, how he could purify such a vast amount of water, what to speak of by his toe. If he had some chemical factory somewhere purifying the Ganges, then people would take it a little more seriously nowadays. we discovered on some planet there was a chemical factory, and Lord Vishnu is manufacturing water and selling it throughout the whole universe. People think, well, that sounds pretty logical. But just sitting there and water emanating from the top of the universe through the whole of the causal ocean and coming down in Lord Shiva's hair, because they don't believe in Lord Shiva either, and then emanating from there, coming down throughout the whole universe, and finally winding up in the Earth planet, and then the Earth planet, just by having that water go down to the lower regions, be able to purify the ashes of Sarga Muni's sons, who suddenly go to heaven. So people think that this is ridiculous. They don't believe in Lord Shiva, they don't believe in Lord Vishnu, they don't believe in, you know, the lower planetary systems, they don't believe in the ash, you know, water washing over some ashes, suddenly the people go to the heavenly planets. It just seems, it'll seem completely fantastic. And here we are in the ninth canto, right before we get to the tenth canto, and it seems like we've got the Srimad Bhagavatam has gone from prayers of Prahlad Maharaj and all kinds of great devotees praying about Krishna consciousness, and suddenly we're in the most, seemingly the most mundane part of the Bhagavatam. We'll hear about Pururava enchanted by Urvashi, and here's Lord Ramachandra. In other words, there's a whole history of the reigns of kings. And some of them have seemed quite mundane. Even the fact that some of them, you have Parasaram killing so many Kshatriyas, you have Pururava enchanted by Urvashi, and so why does this fit in? How does this fit into the Bhagavatam? Why is it that suddenly now there's some Gandhis washing over the ashes and the people go to heaven? Seems almost like a religious kind of belief. Take a few ashes, add a little Ganges water to it, and you get heaven. Because ultimately, Bhagavatam has to teach us that even in the most exalted positions in the material world, there's no real happiness, that no one really makes any real progress here. That even when we hear about the dynasty of the kings, they're not just ordinary kings. It's not like the royal family in England nowadays, which is all just formality. Maybe they have a little money, but they have no power. They have no obvious power, at least. And if they have some power, they have no real personal power, physical power. Whatever they can do is all by intrigue. They have to pay so many people off. But here are actually great personalities who are ruling over the world, but ultimately they don't really make any real progress. Even though they go to heaven, or even they meet the most beautiful Apsara, Urvashi, still they wind up in the same place in the material world. That ultimately one has to give all these things up, even the greatest material enjoyment, and ultimately surrender to Krishna. Therefore the dynasties will end here with a description of, this is only, ultimately it's all up to Krishna. In any case, here it also mentions that the Ganges is very purifying, but we understand also everything purifies in a reciprocation with our consciousness. The holy name is purifying, Srimad Bhagavatam is purifying, the Prasadam is purifying, the deities are purifying, but there also has to be some kind of consciousness behind it. For instance, Nala Kulavera and Mani Griva, they're both on the bathing in the Ganges with some other damsels of heaven. But they were not becoming purified because their mentality was sinful. Instead, they wound up being cursed and becoming trees. Therefore, the Ganges water, although very powerful, if we're not in the right consciousness, then it won't be very effective. Because then how can we explain that ashes, how conscious are ashes? That just the ashes being plus the Ganges were able to elevate them to the heavenly planets. Well, in other words, the laws of nature are quite subtle. But the sons of Sargara, on behalf of their father, did a mission. They were certainly not sinful in one sense, although somehow or another, by some sinful by some circumstance they became sinful by declaring war against Kapiladev, because they misunderstood what was actually taking place, and therefore they became ashes, and who knows where they went. But somehow or another, offense against Kapiladev was mitigated by their being washed with the water of the Ganges, their ashes. They were able to be liberated to the heavenly planets from wherever they were. Therefore, sometimes the laws of nature are more subtle than we understand, but still we can negate the fact that the description of the Bhagavatam, we can't eliminate consciousness from it. As Prabhupada in Nectar of Devotion explains, that there are many amazing things that happen by performing different devotional activities. If one claps one's hands before the deities, then sinful reactions fly from the bird of our body, or fly from our body just like birds fly from a tree. Clapping Hare Krishna, clapping our hands while we're chanting Hare Krishna. So if anyone has ever noticed sinful reactions just flying from your body, that would be quite... Look. But they're all going away. Goodbye. Or it says that simply by taking charanamrita that one goes to heavenly planets and enjoys life. Or that the residents of Jagannath Puri is seen by the demigods as having four hands. So these seem extraordinary. And Prabhupada says they may be extraordinary, but they're possible for some persons who are actually in a very elevated consciousness. They can actually perceive such a benefit from their transcendental activities. Others may not receive such a benefit because it depends upon our consciousness, our faith. If one is convinced that it won't work, then it doesn't work. And if one is convinced that it will work, then it will work. But that conviction is not something artificial. It comes from actual experience. And that experience comes from knowing how to do it. Everything requires a technique. And the technique is not something that comes automatically. It comes from practice. So the purifying nature of the Ganges, the ability to appreciate the Ganges, means that we have to come to a devotional consciousness. And it's such a devotional consciousness that the Mother Ganges can reciprocate with us. We're able to experience the potency of the Ganges. Similarly, that's true for anything, any kind of devotional activity. If we honor Krishna in the form of the deities, or even the pictures, or the holy name, or even prasadam, anything we have some faith in, and Krishna will be able to reciprocate with us through that particular devotional activity. Certainly, the Amsuma, I guess that's what it's describing, his dynasty, King Bhagirath, he had great faith in the Ganges. He went through great austerities and penances to bring the Ganges to the place where the ashes were. And certainly by his benediction and goodwill, the sons of Sagara were benefited. In any case, the process of developing faith is by practice. Practicing worshipping the Ganges, practicing drinking the Ganges water. And Prabhupada says that one who regularly worships Mother Ganges, then one gets good health. So good health, if one gets good health simply by doing that, Prabhupada said he knew someone who, just by drinking Ganges water, whenever he got sick, he was cured. And in India they sell Ganges water. I don't know if they sell it here too. They have a Ganga Jal. By such a experience, and certainly faith in the Ganges develops, because it's not just ordinary water. If you drink Perth tap water, if you're sick, I don't think you'll get better. You may die of lead poisoning or something. But by such experience on some platform of improvement, then gradually faith in Mother Ganges develops. Similarly, the Vedic literature is such, it gives directions. And if one knows how to follow them, the result is, on some level, one will realize its validity. Whether through astrology, or Ayurveda, or Dhanurveda, or even here the description of the Ganges. by some practical experience, by some higher taste, by some elevation, by something auspicious happening with one's life, then faith in that particular activity or object increases. For that reason, Prabhupada said, how can we assume that, for instance, millions of people in India, they go to the temples and they worship the deities? Should we assume that they're all a bunch of fools? That they have no idea what's going on? That they were being brainwashed since time immemorial, or at least for thousands of years, and they were just wasting their time worshiping some idol in the temple? They're all insane people, idiots, spending all their money and time worshiping the deities? No, actually, because they got direct reciprocation from the deity, because they got reciprocation from the process, therefore they were worshiping for generation after generation. And it's only when unfaithful persons, by their intense propaganda, are able to convince people that actually it's all mythology. Although these people have no experience within that realm. For instance, here in Australia or in America, or in many countries in the world nowadays, they say that there's a separation from church and state, as if they can separate themselves from God. There's something outside of God's sphere. That means that factually their official philosophy is atheism. For instance, if you go to school and you talk about mathematics and you say 1 + 1 = 2, then you're within the realm of mathematics. And if you say 1 + 1 = 3 and someone says you're wrong, you're still within the realm of mathematics, but you're wrong. So if they say, for instance, if someone, a professor, teaches about Krishna or Zeus or Jupiter or some other gods within the framework of the institution of a university, and they say you're wrong, it's all mythology, or they fire the person. So basically speaking, that they have their opinion that that person's wrong. Then they start dealing within the realm of religion. If you say that there is no Zeus, there is no Krishna, it is all mythology, it's not proper to teach these things in here, then you're dealing in the realm of religion. It's a religious statement. They're saying that their addition, that their 1 + 1 = they're saying it equals 3 rather than 2. They're saying that 1 + 1 = 2 is more or less atheistic, materialistic. So they're born again materialists, that's all. Their official dogma in school and universities is atheism or materialism or impersonalism. And anyone who brings another philosophy about religion, more or less, they're declaring it to be wrong. Therefore, we should not assume that there's actually such a thing as separation of church and state. They simply, officially, more or less, in most Western countries, they tolerate people, their religious beliefs, but officially they say it's all wrong. It has no real place in the country, because they're supposed to rule the country and they don't believe in God. They don't accept God's existence or His authority within the country. Therefore, they're declaring there is no God, really. Because they don't even take Him into account when they have the laws. So, similarly, here it explains about the glories of the Ganges, or in our scriptures, there's so many glories, there's so many aspects of the Vedic culture. And the Vedic culture, by following it, gives us faith, ultimately, in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is not meant simply for some temporary material benefit, but ultimately to lead us to faith in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, from which everything is coming. All the philosophy, all the sciences, etc., they're all coming. Just like we see a beautiful painting, and we appreciate the painting, then actually we must have some appreciation for the painter behind the painting. Generally, people, if they see a very beautiful painting, that they're informed that the painter is present somewhere, they want to get to meet the painter. Not that they say, oh, we're not really concerned about the painter, we just want to look at the painting. No, if they have the opportunity to see the painter, then they would be interested. find out who had the talent to produce such a wonderful painting. So similarly, if the Ganges are able to perform such wonderful things as to purify people, elevate them just by running over their ashes to the heavenly planets, then certainly we'd like to find out where the Ganges comes from, where the Ganges get its power from. Therefore, an inquisitive person will naturally want to find out more about the Ganges. And there, I guess there's quite a bit to find out about the Ganges. After all, when Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, when Lord Chaitanya debated with the Kashmiri Pandit, Digvijay Pandit from Kashmir, Keshava Kashmiri, then Keshava Kashmiri, in as rapidly as the wind, was able to compose 100 verses in glorification of Mother Ganges. So think about that, how in very nice Sanskrit someone is able to do that. If you were asked to compose in 3 days 10 verses about the Prime Minister of Australia, how difficult it would be. How we'd have to, you know, really lie and cheat. And I think just even one verse would be hard enough. But certainly, someone is able to, in just a very rapid speed of mind, speed, glorify Mother Ganges in 100 beautiful Sanskrit verses, then the Ganges must be very, and must have practically unlimited qualities. And indeed, if we look through the Vedic literature, we'll find Mother Ganges in many, many Krishna's transcendental pastimes. And ultimately, as the Ganges emanates here on different planets and is in the causal ocean, she's also undoubtedly present in the spiritual world also, where her original glories are manifested. And she's just one of many sacred rivers, sacred personalities, but here she's given special mention. So I'll stop there. Yes?
A couple of questions, just a technical question, please. The Ganges emanates from the lotus toe, Anantadeva. So can we say Anantadeva is another name for Varnadeva? Because I think we understand that Varnadeva kicked a hole in the...
Yeah, but I don't think so.
So what's being referred to here? Am I correct? Varnadeva?
Trivikram. No, Trivikram.
Trivikrama. But isn't Trivikrama another name of Obama? Three steps.
Trivikrama. Yeah. But Vamana was a little boy. He was one incarnation.
But then he expanded into...
Yeah, he expanded. Trivikrama. He expanded into Trivikrama. I mean, it's all Krishna just expanding in his different
ways. So
is
Ananta a different name for Trivikrama?
Or is it referring to the... Yeah, just referring to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I think it's Anantadeva. Whether that specific Anantadeva lives on the bottom of this universe, as we learn in the sixth canto, and on his hoods, in one of his expansions, he holds all the universe. He holds all the planets, and also we hear that he holds all the universes. So outside, whether generally we understand that Mother Ganges emanates from. From the causal ocean, therefore it's more or less referring to Karana Dakshaya Vishnu. So Karana Dakshaya Vishnu is also an Anantadeva. Whether or not, you know, technically speaking, if you had to draw up a chart, and there was one time in the back of Godhead, there was a chart coming from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, especially Śrīla Bhaktivinoda Thakura's description of the different types of expansions of Krishna, beginning with Svangsa, and then there's Svatma, Svangsa, and Vilas, Prabhas. What's the next group of? I just forgot. Okay, see, there's three main expansions. There's Svangsa Krishna in his original form of in the spiritual world in Vrindavan. And then he has his Tedatmaka Rupa, which is divided into Vilas and Prabhas forms. And from there, there's separate Prabhava and Vaibhava forms in each category. So there we find Krishna in Dwarka, Krishna in the spiritual world, and the expansions of Narayan, etc. So it's quite a technical enumeration of all the divisions of the expansions. And then we have the empower, the avesha, and saktivesha expansions is the third category. So there's tadikatma rupa, the swansa, and there's the empowered incarnations. So Ananta fits into the middle category. Actually, sometimes Ananta fits into the third category, as empowered incarnations.
He's described as Shaktivesha.
Yes, Shaktivesha. But that may refer to a certain Ananta, rather than the Ananta that's being referred to here. Because Krishna's Ananta, he's unlimited. So I imagine it's really referring to someone more like Karna Dakshai Vishnu than to the Ananta who is a Shaktivesha avatar.
I have another question. You're talking about how spiritual advancement is accrued according to one's consciousness. So it seems like, I was thinking about that while I was speaking, I was thinking, it seems like there's different ways to, like, to give an example, let's say someone's, say the Rath Yatra Festival is coming on the street, and the devotees are there, they offer their obeisances to Lord Jagannath with great respect, they chant Hare Krishna and follow the parade. And then there's people who just come off the street and they don't know what they're doing, but they follow the Rath Yatra anyway. And then there's people who are stuck behind in the traffic jam in their cars and they're doing their orders and damn hurries, you know, getting in the way of going to work and they get angry. Yeah, but they still follow the parade. You know, even inadvertently they're following government. There's different advancement that is made from those two different types of people.
Yeah, sure.
So it says that even someone who unknowingly follows, you know, the Rath parade, or they take sadhana without knowing, or they even have a husband, a wife has a husband called Harry, and she's always saying, Harry, 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 Harry.
Harry, go to hell.
there's different levels, there's different intensity of spiritual
life. Oh, yeah, sure.
And if someone, you know, worships the deity and my dear Lord Hari, then there's more advancement to be made than just.
Yeah, of course.
So it's all a matter of one's consciousness.
Yeah. But the other thing we have to take into account is that even if the consciousness is wrong, if the object is right, there will be some benefit.
You see there's agyata. Also there's agyata
spirit. Yeah, a lot of those agyata spirit.
So someone even unknowingly eats beside one, unknowingly they see the agyata, unknowingly they look at the Harinam honey and think it looks pretty, it looks nice. Then they're making spiritual advancement. But it's a less rapidly than if they were.
They're making some advancement, whether it's spiritual or not, it's another thing. But ultimately may lead to spiritual advancement, may lead to faith. Gyata Sukriti, if it's, you get enough of it, then, you know, unless you're averse, you're consciously averse to Krishna, you're a real demon, then you'll probably say, well, that's pretty good, and let me try it out and investigate it further. Because that's the nature. If we like something, then we'll investigate it further. But of course, the people behind are honking the horns, cursing the Haris. It may not be that all those who are cursing are necessarily going to get very good benefit from it. Or very much the Gyatik Sukriti. Of course, they're saying Hari, they may get something, some benefit. But it may take a long time to realize what that benefit is.
Yeah.
Yes.
But how do we understand this pastime of Bhagirath bringing Ganges, and also the water coming from the Chonel, Sarvan, Vishnu, coming from the Vamana Avatar? Is it the same time it happened, or has it different influence?
No, not necessarily. Vamadev put a hole in the universe and the Ganges came.
Yeah.
So that time, there's a whole, I mean, there's many descriptions of the Ganges. Whether this is in the same particular manifestation of the universe, or it's in this universe or some other universe, that may not be there. That's not really known. But obviously when Vamanadeva put his whole, or Trivikram put his whole foot, little toe from the universe, and the Ganges came forth, it doesn't mention that Lord Shiva was there to catch him. So it would seem that I don't see any real connection between them. there may be a connection. I don't know what the connection would be. We have to understand, as it says from the very beginning of the Bhagavatam, it's not historical, the Bhagavatam, in the sense that we take history. We've been trained up that history is linear. It's all progressive. And then you have to put it in order, otherwise it doesn't make any sense. You know, Ganges don't come cyclically. There is, you know, one part where the universe is purest, the water came down. Here's another thing. You know, it seems like, and if you read, there was one book put out about the Ganges. You read it, there's so many different stories, and some of them seem quite contradictory. But it may be different universes at different times. The idea of the Bhagavatam is not to give us a historical linear understanding of reality or events that took place, but it's to give us the principles behind devotional service. The histories are just pointed out as examples, so we can learn the principles behind devotional service. They're not meant as a history of the universe, a definitive history of the universe. So therefore, mundane scholars become confused by so many stories, and they seem contradictory, and there's no real clear understanding of what the history is. Therefore, they reject it as simply mythology, written by primitive people who couldn't understand what the how to write proper history. So they just, in their hallucinations, they just told all kinds of crazy stories about Ganges and demigods with hair catching rivers. So they just, and ashes going to the heavenly planets, and etc. So therefore they just reject it as mythological, because they don't understand the purpose behind it, nor do they accept the purpose. So for ourselves, we don't really get generally caught up in all the details of the history. We're more interested in learning the basic principles behind devotional service so we can apply them in our life and make some spiritual advancement. One of the principles, though, is not to burn yourself to ashes and then throw some Ganges water, have someone throw Ganges water. That's basically not the purpose of this description here. It's to give us some understanding, at least historically speaking, the Ganges is quite powerful. And that by bathing in them, certainly we'll get some benefit. Maybe not the same benefit that the ashes of the sons of Sagara Maharaj got, but we'll definitely get some benefit. And our benefit, of course, is to help us advance spiritually. Anything else?
And the ashes of father mother, like a three dynasties, means like an Amshaman, a tribe, they couldn't go that before, then his son tribe, they get people that before, then the regular tribe, and they get the people that the three generations are apart, the ashes were still there.
Well, I never said that Amshaman was burnt to ashes.
Not Amshaman.
The ashes is still there.
Yeah. He performed the service,
but he's saying that they have blown away from everything else.
Well, they're not on this earth planet. They're on some other subterranean planet because there wasn't much wind. Or maybe, you know, the ashes were quite compressed. Who knows? I don't know. You want to have an investigation, go down to the subterranean planet, check out the ashes there, check out the wind temperature. It's like when you see that picture of them, they went to the moon and the astronauts get out of the capsule with the flag and the flag starts flapping back and forth. You think, wow, what a patriotic flag. There's no moon and still waving anyhow to the people back on the earth, just out of feelings of patriotism. So automatically start doubting this is ridiculous. Of course, you know, how can in a windless place a flag wave? It's only the wind that makes flags wave. So here we wonder, you're wondering, how is it that ashes, which are generally not very heavy, can sit there for a few hundred years just waiting for the Ganges to come? Well, I don't know. Just you may meditate on that and come up with the answer. Either, you know, and speculate about it. But all we can do is ultimately accept the fact that there were ashes, and they did stay there long enough for the Ganges to come. Why they did it, I don't know. I don't know all the factors. You may, maybe before you could research the Puranas and see that maybe the same story is told in more detail, but here it's only this much is told. generally we go through the whole Bhagavatam and try and find all the things that we think are fallacious. And we think, well, this whole thing is mythology, so let me go and enjoy life. Why am I wasting my time in the Hare Krishna movement, controlling my senses? But if it's all mythology, I might as well do something practical and enjoy my senses. So generally we research through the Vedic literature in that way, trying to find all the default, all the faults, seeming faults. And when we get enough of them, we think, oh, it's just ridiculous. It's not, it all must be untrue. For that reason, Prabhupada was very adamant the fact that these so-called astronauts, they never went to the moon. Because if they went to the moon and then there was no life on the moon, then the Bhagavatam is wrong. And if the Bhagavatam is wrong on that point, then it may be wrong at all the other points. Then it's fallible like everyone else. And such an important point where it says there's life in all the planets, and if there's life on, there's no life on the moon planet, it's supposed to be a heavenly planet, then it casts doubt on the whole Bhagavatam, its validity. So therefore Prabhupada was adamant that they were just cheating. And of course, as we review the evidence, the so-called evidence, we can see that they were cheating. But as far as the Srimad Bhagavatam being wrong, you know, that you have to prove. You have to go there, wherever it's describing, and show that there's a lot of wind there. So how could the ashes have stayed there? But I don't think we have the means to do that. None of us are capable of going to where these ashes were. And what to speak of bringing along a wind meter? We'd probably get all the way down there through the to the subterranean planets and say, oh, I've got the wind meter. That's nice. No, I forgot something. So we shouldn't worry so much about that. We should worry more about the principle behind it. And if you want to find out about something about what's saying said here, you can go to India and bathe in Ganges and see what the result is. That will give, because it's the glorification of the Ganges, it's not a glorification of the fact that the ashes just stayed around there. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Grantharai Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.